Hello, I'm Kirsty Rice and welcome to Two Fat Expats, the podcast about living a fat expat life. We want you to fill your expat life up to the brim until it's overflowing. Today's podcast, though, is all about when your fat expat life ends and you're heading home. Yep, today we're going to talk about being a fat repat. Today we're going to teach you how to happily walk away from your expat life. We're going to talk to expats who've repatriated successfully, and we're also going to get some great tips from Helen Watt, who's a repatriation coach. You didn't know there were repatriation coaches, did you? Maybe you did? Okay. So possibly it was just me. Right now I'm in Adelaide with 1 week to go until I hop back on the plane to Qatar, and Nikki is in Hamburg, which I've noticed she started pronouncing as Hamburg or Hamburg. Let's go and see what that's about, shall we? Hello, Nikki Moffat. How are you?
I love your German accent. That's what I'm doing. I'm fine. Thank you, Kirsty Rice.
What is that? I noticed today I heard you say something about being in Hamburg, and it was like, all right, I need to ask, have I been saying it wrong? How do you say Hamburg?
Well, Hamburg is what you say if you're an English speaker who is not from Germany. I guess Hamburg is more what you say if you live here and you talk about it here. So because of my new increased German lessons and Germanness, I have been trying to pronounce some things correctly. So half the time I say it and half the time I don't.
So there you go. So is your accent changing? Because I noticed the other day you did a little Facebook Live in the snow, which was fantastic. God, your apartment is so pretty on the outside, but I digress. I noticed a couple of people asked you about your accent. They thought your accent was changing.
Well, I don't know, because I can't tell. But it was interesting. One of the people was someone who I saw in Australia in July, who I hadn't seen for quite some time. And she commented that I'd had an American twang that had gone. And I don't. And then another person commented something else, and that person hadn't seen me since I lived in South Africa. Now, I have to admit, even though I hate it, to say that when I lived in South Africa, I did change my accent a little bit. Just to be more easily understood, or just because I'm a joiner, I don't know. And then when I lived in America, I did have sometimes some hard R's, because yes. If you don't have a hard R, no one understands what you're saying.
No, they don't. Like water. When you go to the bar, you can't order a water because they'll just say, what?
Yeah.
So you find it's like, water. I want a water. Yeah. Okay, what's been going on in your life this week in, how do I say it?
Hamburg.
Hamburg.
This week I've played tennis for the first time in 7 months, so I was excited about that. Mm-hmm. Although I played on a very bizarre kind of carpet-like surface with gravel, and we had to kind of walk around with chains. You know when you play tennis on clay and it has to be run over afterwards to sort of redistribute things? Yes, well, you're not really an expat if you don't play tennis once a week.
Well, then I have never been an expat for the last 17 years.
I'm kidding. It's just one of the stereotypes.
I know, but golf is in there too, isn't it?
Yes,
and
that's right.
I did do a little bit of golf in Jakarta. And then I just had a ridiculous amount of children and I was never going to golf again.
Yeah. So that's what I did. And then you mentioned I did my first Facebook Live video, which I got all excited about because I saw about a centimeter of snow. So I started taking a video. And then, my German class was cancelled this week due to lack of interest, which was a little bit disappointing. So they said we don't, and I was doing 2 hours a day, 3 days a week. And they said, we don't have any more courses at your level, so you'll have to go to a 5 day a week course. So that's that's been a bit confronting because I went there. It's the same level and I've gone back a couple of chapters, so that's good. I'm doing a bit of Wiederholung, as I say, or a bit of repeating. But it's full of like these very keen little learners, and they like have a WhatsApp group and they share, you know, when there's things they don't understand. And I'm like, oh yeah, I need to be just like being back at uni. I'm like, wow, this is really learning. Like before I was like with just some people who were sort of, let's say half-assed for want of a better term.
Yeah.
And now I'm with the keen beans. So hopefully it will make me a bit more keen.
Is it a real mixture of nationalities in your German class?
Oh, God, yes, such a mixture. So there's we've got a lady from Iran, Italy, two Italians, a British guy, a guy turned up today from Sudan, and lots of different people from different places, a Korean lady, and English isn't, you know, English is another language for them. So it's, yeah, it's really... So in my last class, there was no English spoken at all. But in this class, sometimes people break into English and then half the people look like they don't know what's going on because they don't, which is fair enough. They're already speaking more than one language. So it's all happening. Anyway, that's me for this week. I'm working on it. What about you? What's been going on in your world?
I have been working. So, you know, I had quite the break when my husband and my kids were here, and I really did down tools and not do anything. But now it's very, you know, it's all getting a little bit serious. You know, we'll be...
And exciting.
And very, very exciting. I mean, that's the thing. It's remembering to grab on to the excitement and enjoy the nerves, you know, without getting a bit... freaked out. And it's all healthy. It's just that there's a lot to sort of pull together. So I am flat out, and if people don't know what I'm talking about, we are launching a Fat Expats newsletter, which is coming soon, and it's doing all sorts of really interesting, exciting things like putting together explainer videos and Facebook marketing and, you know, doing the last minute touches on edits for bonus reports and really, really good stuff, but it's busy. But I also made a little bit of a trip. I went for a drive up to see my parents. I had, at the end of last week, I had my daughter here with a girlfriend of hers from boarding school, and the girlfriend of hers lives about half an hour away. Well, her hometown is half hour away from my parents' hometown. So I drove them both up there, and then I had time with my parents all on my own, which never, ever, ever happens. It was just bliss. It was really, really good. I mean, it's when you grow up and have kids, you very rarely get to just sit and have dinner with your parents without anyone else.
That's true. And how did that feel then? Because sometimes I think I need my kids as kind of a buffer. It's almost like I've forgotten how sometimes how to talk to my parents without my children there.
Yeah. You know, it was really, really nice. It was one of those perfect weather nights where not a breath of wind, perfect temperature. We sat out on the balcony on the river. Everybody had a good day. We shared a bottle of wine, and yeah, just lovely. It was really, really lovely. I loved it. And then, you know, home just with them and hanging out.
That's
so it was
nice.
Good.
And that's so special because I know you've talked about being in Australia for a long time, but that's one of the things you do when you have time. So when you're an expat and you're just visiting, you know, it's everybody and it's all together, and it sometimes can be more stressful. But just to have the chillax and the just relaxing is nice.
Do you know, you're bang on. That's what it is, isn't it? It's because when you come home, there's never any time to really sit and talk. And this was, you're absolutely right. I hadn't thought about that because the next day I had lunch with my mum and my sister, and we went to the pub and just sat. And once again, no kids, no husband, and you're just having girl chats with your sister and your mum.
Oh,
and it's relaxed. Yeah, it was good. It was good. Anyway, Nikki. Oh, sorry. What were you going to say?
I just want to say one quick thing that on that is that every time that we come to Adelaide as a family or as a couple, sometimes we leave the kids and just fly down for a couple of days, is that my mother-in-law sets a lunch date with my husband. So the two of them just go to lunch by themselves. And I used to think, oh, that's a bit strange. But actually, It's not. It's kind of like what you did with your mum and dad and with your mum and sister. It's carving out the time to make something special.
I hope I get to do that with my boys. Do you know, yes. I get it, you know, and wouldn't it be lovely just to, when your kids get married, to be able to do that? I think your mother-in-law's very clever that she does do that, and your husband's very lovely that he goes along with it, you know.
Well,
a lot of men. Yes.
No, they have a lovely time, though. So that's good.
Yes. Okay. So, Nikki, today's episode, we're talking about repatriating. Have you ever considered repatriating?
I'm going to say no. That would be the short answer. It's not that it's never crossed my mind. It's not what I wrote down. But I think no. I mean, and it's a state of readiness. And I know people always don't get to choose, but it's certainly something that we're looking at the moment, obviously, given what we're going through with the company, my husband's company. But I'm going to give it a no. And you?
Right. No, and pretty much the same answer, you know, with the situation with my husband's company at the moment, you know, the choice may be taken away from us. Now, I know last time we did this topic, we kind of had a bit of a different spin on it. We sort of talked about more how hard repatriation is. Have you listened to that episode? Now, that episode, if people are looking for it, is season 1, episode 16. Did you get a chance to have a listen to it, Nikki?
I did. I listened to it the first time it came out, and then I went back this week and listened to it again. And you and Sarah talked about and to Juliet and Menai, and they were interviewed, and they had lots of things to say about repatriation. But I have to say, it was a little bit of a controversial episode, and only in retrospect, probably, because a lot of the comments on the blog post or on the Two Fat Expats website said that there was perhaps a little bit of a negative spin put on the repatriation stories, and a lot of people had happy repatriation stories, and they wanted those kind of things to be shared. So guess what?
Today we're going to do happy. Now, I reckon if there's ever a time to remember that you should be living a fat expat life, it's when you're thinking about repatriation. Because after interviewing and talking to so many women about this, I really think it all comes down to being in the right frame of mind and being mentally prepared to repatriate. And I know, you know, now when I'm looking at my husband's job and is it going to be around and is he going to be okay, you sort of think, well, have we done everything? Have we done everything we wanted to do? And then you go, well, this is not the time you should be thinking about it. You should have been thinking about it every day. Do you know, you should have been making sure you were doing it every day.
That's right. And not thinking about, yeah. And now you think about, have we done everything? And then you think, well, we don't want to go out and do lots of things now because what if we do have to go home and then it would be better to have saved that money? It's a catch-22 and roundabout situation. Anyway, I think it's fair to say that when we put out the questions on the 4 Kids 22 Suitcases page and also on the 2 Fat Expats page, Facebook, that we had lots and lots of feedback, lots of great feedback. And we also had a lot of people who are going to be repatriating over the coming months, and they wanted some tips from those who've done it and done a good job. So it was awesome.
Hey, I wanted to talk about and kick off with all of these comments because we had so many comments and it just went bananas. But there was one comment that I reckon the last time I looked, it had had, you know, over 70 likes of people who drilled into Zoe's comment. And it's
lots of feedback, lots of thanks so much for these comments.
Yeah. So I want to share Zoe's comments for those who didn't get to see it. And she said, I've given the same advice to all my fellow expats that are becoming repats. Always treat your repatriation as another expat role. You're not moving back home because no one can move back in time. And that is excellent. So good. Excellent. Your home will have changed. Your friends will have changed. Time stands still for no one. And you, of course, have changed with all your new adventures and exposure to the world. One of the hardest parts I have seen, says Zoe, is that firstly, when you come home for visits, everyone will make an effort to see you. But when you move home, well, their normal lives is not as much time spent with you. And also remember that you're forgotten, that if you are forgotten in an invite to a barbecue, it's most probably that they've forgotten that you live at home now and that they're just not used to including you on all the invites. So don't take it as a personal attack. She says, try and make a few new friends that have been expats or are expats to your hometown. And the reason for this advice is because expat life sounds posh to those of us, don't do it. And she said, washing is washing, isn't it? And I think I've heard so many people say the same thing, you know, in one of the interviews that's, you know, I'll share with you a bit later, but same thing was said, you know, you're still doing that same life. You're just picking it up and moving it to a different location. Anyway, Zoe finishes by saying you cannot spend your life at every social event feeling like you cannot talk about a certain period of your life. And that is so important because we do stop talking about our lives, I think, when we go home, because we can almost feel the eye roll from the friend that just doesn't want to hear about it.
But it's not wanting to hear, but it's also just a not – there's no point of reference for them. Like they haven't done that. So it's not necessarily interesting to them.
Yes. Yeah, that's right.
It doesn't mean they're not their friend and not your friend and they don't like you and they don't think that you're awesome and they don't want to have you to a dinner party. It just means that they just have no point of reference for that time in your life. They were going on living their life, so what's the difference? So back to the expert, the experienced and happy repats.
Yes.
So Jeannie, I think it's Jeannie, she was in Singapore for 3 years and now she's back in the US. And she said it took 2 years to feel really back at home. They weren't really ready to give it up, but again, they approached it as a new kind of location and they now have their groove. But she was able to take, as a lot of people do, her expat experience and create a small business by partnering with tech companies to help their newly hired expats and families move to the area and adjust with schools and the community. And that's kind of her little bit of keeping her toe in, and she really enjoys that. So that's a happy story.
Yeah, yeah. And like you said, she's found that thing that's going to keep her happy with that. Alexandra said she's been abroad for 10 years. They've lived in Sweden, Denmark, Germany, UAE, and then Doha. And they've been home in Poland for over 6 months. She said it did take some time to feel at home and to get settled, and that she still has itchy feet. But she said even though she's left a piece of her heart in all of those places and misses them, she feels like, and I love this, that I've sailed into the harbour, put the sails down, and it's time to anchor. So I think that's her very European way of saying it was time to go home.
Yeah. Yes. So Nicola moved back to the UK 5 years ago. So she said life's been good despite having to live apart for her husband's work. So he travels. We've had to work hard at our relationship, but we've settled where we live, which was an area which was new to them. And I chose to take on repatriation as if it was an overseas move. And I've not lived in this part of the UK before and not been there for 10 years. And she says now she's worked for the past 3 years, felt more settled, unloaded, less like I live in porridge, which I think is a reference to the TV show, and no longer like a mouse in someone else's experiment, which was a shout out to the employer's decision making.
Yeah, I love that phrase because we've all been a mouse in someone else's experiment, haven't we, Nikki?
I feel a little bit like a mouse.
Me too. Okay, so we had this fantastic thread of Kiwis. Yes. Now, one family back, Francesca, another who's moving back, Chrissy and Claire, and they were all looking for tips. So Francesca said they've been back in New Zealand for a year, and that it took them 10 months to settle and getting used to the lifestyle and being on more of a stringent budget. She said there were so many pros for us being home that they managed to afford a lifestyle block, so came back to a very different lifestyle from what they left. She said that that was sort of the secret. We'd been back to New Zealand once before to our same old little house in the city, and it was boring. Yeah, I wonder if that's it. Do the expats that kick off with something completely new, does that keep them going a bit too? Because it is a little bit like an expat assignment.
I guess that it must be. And what is a lifestyle block? Is that a...
Is that the equivalent of the quarter acre block in Australia?
I don't know. Well, I don't know if in quarter acre. I don't know if it means that you like a little bit out of town and you've got an acre and you can like have your chickens and stuff like that. I'm not sure.
I think it's a hobby farm. I'm just having a little look online. So you can buy lifestyle blocks and. A hobby farm is also called a lifestyle block in New Zealand. There you go. Answered it.
Perfect. Okay, yes. We're up on that now.
Okay.
But all the other Kiwis were very happy with Francesca's comments, and I think they'll probably reach out to her. Maybe Francesca's made herself some new friends.
Okay, we had Stephanie, who said that was the best thing she ever did. Now, that's a very happy repat. My kids have benefited from the experiences living abroad in another culture, but they've been really excited being back in our own culture, which is Scotland. We treated the return as a new posting. There it is again, Nikki. And we moved to a new neighbourhood, got on with getting to know it, much like we did in our other postings. We joined up, extended and accepted invitations and did lots of exploring, always finding the positive and not dwelling on the negative. We are all very happy to be home and to have put some roots down.
Melissa repatriated to Canada after 2.5 years in India, and the first winter was abysmal, I can imagine.
I'm hearing you, Melissa.
India to Canada.
Oh, yeah. She came back to the same house, the same friends and the same community, and quickly realized that she was a different person. She had grown so much and had new things to contribute to her community. Once she found her groove, she said, "I'm more confident than ever. Winter is still tough though." But I think that's cool. She's really looked at it as if she's got more to offer now, and so she stepped up and did it, as opposed to just feeling grumpy and not doing it.
Yeah, one day you're sweltering with deli belly and the next minute you're in minus 40. Okay, so Susan was in Shanghai as a non-working spouse for just 13 months and was not quite ready to repat, but there were benefits like getting back to work. People are occasionally interested in hearing about life in China, but expressing the depth of it all seems impossible in short conversations. I think that's what I was trying to say before. Yeah, it's too hard to wrap it all up in a pretty bow. I admire those of you who do it with children. She said that's true superhero power. She said that her story might be titled Menopause in China, Don't Do It. Still, nothing as difficult as raising small children on the way. My advice is stay connected to groups like this and you will know you are never alone. Oh, that's beautiful, and that's very true. You've got to stay connected with other people who have repatriated or to be able to have those conversations.
Yeah, so Janine has been home in the UK for 3 years. She had no regrets. She was happy living away, but more than happy to repatriate and see her own country through new eyes. She has a love of exploring places even in my own country, and this was because of my time away, which I think is true. People ask me all the time about things in Australia that I've never seen or been to, and I think, you know, when I go back, I'm going to do more of that, more traveling. But she said, "I know a lot of my friends suffered coming home, but I live with the motto, try to accept situations out of your control and be grateful just for being alive and be happy wherever you are." Mm. And she sent out a message to all the other people. She'd obviously read the comments on the page. She said, "Good luck to all about to embark on travels home or away and in around our beautiful home called Earth."
That's very spiritual. We're all in this together. Lucy Moore, 8 months in, we're loving repatriation. For us, it's another adventure in our lives. It's not all been easy, but there are more positives than not. We moved back to their old house after 5 years away. Kids had a rocky start, having never attended school in England, but they're all settling in well now, and making friendships that are likely to last more than 12 months. Yes, that's a true thing, isn't it? Like, at least you're hoping, aren't you, when you come home that your kids aren't going to have to go through all of that. Yes, an exciting, positive part of expat life is the variety of friendships, but the emotion when best friends leave or are left was very hard to handle. She said they made a list of places to visit before they moved back. Oh, that's a good one, when we realised that our kids knew less about their own culture and country than they did about our expat countries. So far, we're halfway through the list and have ticked off castles, historical places of interest, and a premier football match, to name a few. We've tried to be as proactive about visiting places in our home country as we were in the expat world. That's brilliant. I really like that. That's a good one.
Okay, so there were loads and loads of responses on both the pages, on Facebook pages, but we've tried to share a lot of the ones here that were mainly positive, because there are so many people about to undertake this or starting the journey home, and we want to focus on the positive side of it for them. We want to say, though, we acknowledge it isn't easy, it's different for everybody, and the same things also don't work for everybody. But we hope that what we've talked about is a good representation of those tips for those of you who are looking for ideas on how to tackle an upcoming repat move.
Okay, so let's have a listen to Helen. Helen Watt is a repatriation coach. That's what she does for a living. And I rang her earlier this week just to ask her about her role and what advice she gives expats.
Expats on the whole tend to be a quite resilient bunch, and they're pretty good at adapting to where they go, and yet when they go home, so many of them really struggle. What I do is work with those people who've gone home and are going, who am I now? How am I supposed to settle? What's this all supposed to look like, and where am I going next? So I spend time working with people, a lot around identity actually, because they're often quite confused about who they are now that they've gone home and they're not this expat anymore, and people just kind of see them as everyday people that should just be mixing in and getting on, and yet they themselves still feel really different. My husband and I spent the best part of 10 years in Kyrgyzstan in Central Asia with initially just the two of us, and then we came, had children, took them out there as well, got back about 6 years ago now, but we went through all sorts of different things out there, from teen conflict to revolutions to homeschooling children to running parenting courses, doing children's literacy projects, all sorts of different things, just trying to help people and do something different and do something more meaningful than staying in the rat race. But yeah, when we got back, each time that we came back, we had a couple of different re-entries, because one time we had to leave our organisation and find a different organisation to go with, and the re-entries were different each time. But when I came back, I was determined that I was going to do something to help people who went through the re-entry process, because there seemed to be so little in place. I trained as a coach and trained as a debriefer so that I could help people through that process. I mean, I think so many people find when they come back that people just aren't interested in their story. But one of the main things about debriefing is that you've got a captive audience, one person who's going to sit and listen to you for 2-3 hours, however long it takes, to just process some of the stuff that you've been through. And it helps you to order your own mind as to, oh, okay, so it's okay to feel stressed now because this was really stressful or whatever. It looks at the bad things, but it also looks at the highlights and the good things that you've taken on board and what you're wanting to learn from it and keep on learning as you adjust back. So it's a really good process of just being able to kind of assimilate what you've been through and where you're taking it on a very personal level. It's not an organizational thing. It's very much a personal thing.
You mentioned that you suffered from depression when you came back. Do you think that was an expat thing and something that's common in the expat world, or was it just more a personal thing of your own?
I think it was a whole mixture. We had a revolution that started in the town that we were living in the last year that we were there. It wasn't to do with us coming home. We'd already decided to come home, but it was a hugely stressful time, and we had personal threats levelled against us and gunmen running amok on the streets and two little children to look after. So it was a very, very stressful time. So in many ways, I wasn't surprised that once I got home and my husband was a bit more sorted job-wise and I got my children back in school, that it then hit me quite hard. They say that about a third of people who go home at some point struggle with some sort of form of depression, whether that's just very mild and they come through it or whether they need medication or some extra help. But at least a third of repatriates struggle at some point with depression.
There is a common phrase that's used in the expat world, and that is that your move home will be the hardest move you'll make. So what do you tell people when they arrive at your doorstep and they're really struggling?
That they're not the only one. I mean, so many people find it hard. A lot of what I do is actually just normalising things for people and going, you know what, so many people struggle with that. And in so many ways, people can feel very isolated when they get back, probably because there's not many other repats near them or they haven't done it before or anything else. And to be able to go, you know what, that's okay. It's okay to feel completely exhausted because you're just going through so many different things.
And you touched on something before about how, you know, nobody seems to care about your story. You know, as expats, when we meet each other, we have these great qualifying sentences when we start, you know, hi, I'm Kirsty, I'm from Australia, I've been here for X amount of years, I've got four children, they're at this school. Do you know, we get all that stuff out the road really quickly and we all want to hear each other's story. And that is the most common thing you hear from expats is nobody cares. Do you know, I went to the schoolyard, nobody cares. What do you tell people when they come to you and say that? You know, nobody cares where I've been, who I am, whatever, that's all out the window. How do you tell them to cope with that?
Yeah, it's a really tricky one because part of it is our own attitude, because we need to learn to be listeners as well. And I think quite often when we come back from somewhere, we're full of where we've come back from and we want to share it and we want to talk about it, but actually we don't let other people talk about where they're at as well. So part of it is kind of learning to hold back a little bit so we can enter into somebody else's world in order that they will then enter into ours as well. But part of it is just learning to share our story in a way that gives hooks for other people. One of the processes I take people through is just learning to tell this, I call it a 20 or 30 second story. Summarize, obviously you can't summarize how many years in 30 seconds, but if you can put something in there which A, makes a connection with the people that you're talking to, and B, gives a little hook so that if they are interested, they can then ask some further questions or you can get more into a conversation by it. But if they're not, you can also sense it in their body language and then go, okay, so they're not going to take it any further, let's move on. So part of it is about learning to tell your story in the right sort of way. And part of it is also about coming up with questions that link into their world so that you can move into their world as well. Does that make sense?
That makes great sense. And how do you settle if you're that person that seems to constantly have itchy feet? Like you, we've all heard the story, well, I got home and I was home for 2 years and then it was like, oh, you know, I'm kind of ready for the next posting, but there is no posting because I'm home and I've repatriated. How do those people, how do they scratch that itch?
Yeah, I mean, some people find jobs that keep on taking them back again for shorter placements or whatever. I think the big thing with that is some people will never settle down and will always want to be travelling and doing something different and finding something. And if that's part of your vision, great, go with it. But I would also add the caveat, make sure you're not running away. I think too many people come back, it's really hard, and therefore they choose another overseas placement because they haven't actually been able to work through that transition. And they become a bit of a serial expat because the pain is too much when they go home. So I would really just want them to just stop and think, okay, what am I running away from? Is there something that I'm running away from that I need to deal with here? Because otherwise it's always going to haunt me every time I come back. So as I said, for some people it's absolutely fine and that's just what they're called to do, if you like. That's what their vision is and that's where they thrive better. But for some other people there's that sense that they're running away from something, and I would just want to stop them and slow them down and go, okay, what is it? What is it that we're running away from here? Because if you can adjust now, then any future adjustments will be easier as well. You become something different when you're overseas, definitely. You get moulded slightly to the culture that you go to, and you take on what suits you out of that culture, so that when you go back, there are bits of you that are different. You're not the same shape that you were before. You have a wider worldview. Your politics have probably changed. Your religious views may well have changed. I mean, not just those sort of things, but even your physical appearance, your attitude, so many different things will have changed in so many ways, which then might rub up against other people in your home culture who can be quite threatened by it, actually coming with a different and outsider pair of eyes when, to all intents and purposes, you look like the same person you were when you went away.
Do you think, you know, many people when they're writing about this, and, you know, I've seen so many comments on the Four Kids, 20 Suitcases page where people have said, oh, you come home and nothing's changed and they're all the same. Do you think we rub people up the wrong way when we voice those sort of opinions?
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we know that we have changed hugely, and I think that's the issue, is that we've done so much changing that it's harder for us to see what's changed back home, because things will have changed. I mean, things always do change. Now that we're back for 6 years, we can kind of look back and think, yeah, gosh, things have changed here, but they just changed at an awful lot slower a pace, because it's a whole society, it's a whole culture and whatever, whereas you as an individual change hugely when you're away. So, yes, it's difficult not to say those sort of things, because it's just an observation. It's just like, well, I've been changing, so what have you guys been doing? But actually, I think sometimes we do need to learn to hold our tongues and share it with people that will also understand, other repats or other people who are currently overseas, because sometimes those sort of comments aren't particularly helpful.
So would you say it's important, Helen, that then when you repatriate, that you do find some other repats that you can connect with to have those conversations?
I think it's really important, whether they're in your city or whether you're Skyping them or whatever, if you can find other people who have lived overseas and understand the process of coming back, then it can just, again, it can normalise that process for you, and somebody else who understands what it feels like to go through it. Obviously, I wouldn't advocate just finding those sort of people and not living in the real world where you are as well, but having one or two of those sort of people in your life that you can connect with and who understand where you're coming from, even if they've been in a completely different country, it doesn't matter. It's that whole process of having been an expat and having come home which makes a difference.
So, Nikki, what did you think?
Well, great, lots of things, and lots of a little bit of the themes that we actually heard from the people who've commented as well. So that means everyone's going the right direction. I thought, though, that every day the people should be mixing in and getting on, and you're no longer special, that feeling. I think that's interesting. The stuff about people aren't interested in your story. So basically you should hire someone so you can tell them your story. A debrief to assimilate. So a little bit of compression, which comes back to one of the people that we talked about who has started her own business and deals with expats. So basically that's what she's doing. She's talking to them about her experiences so she can sort of get on with the rest of her life, I guess. The other thing that really struck home to me was depression, and that a third of repatriates struggle with it. Mm. And I do know that because it has happened to some of my friends who've repatriated. Some of them have been hit by depression in a very tough way, and it's been really hard for them to get through it. Now, again, as she said, it's not necessarily just to do with the repatriation. But I think it's something you should look out for. It's like when you have a baby, you need to look out for postpartum depression. You know, you don't think you're going to get it and you don't worry about it all the time, but you just keep an eye out. And if something happens, look after yourself.
Okay, so let's talk to Nikki. So Nikki was an expat for 10 years and they have actually, I think Nikki may, I'm hoping that I'm not cutting her short. I think it's about 10 years that they've been expats for, and they did Jakarta and Houston, and they have happily repatriated home. And I had a bit of a chat to Nikki about what her life looks like now and what she thinks worked for her.
Well, work, really. The job, the way the job was going, we'd left Houston because our visas had expired. The company rarely extend them beyond 5 years. So we moved back to Europe And then the option in the end was either to come home, or there were some other options, but my husband actually went into consultancy on his own, and that was something he wanted to do, so that was one reason. But we were ready, I think. Yeah, we were ready to come home. Elderly parents, and yeah, we were ready to come home, I think.
And so when you came home, was there anything that sort of surprised you, in that stuff you thought might be easy and stuff you thought might be hard?
Well, you think that everything's going to be the same as when you left. I mean, it depends how often you visit home. I suppose we were home every summer, and we worked hard. Well, I did, worked hard to maintain our links with home. Our friends, we kept our house, although it was rented out. I thought we would just slot back into everyday life, but things had moved on. Maybe not so much where we live, but yeah, things had. I thought it would be easier just to slot back in, and in many ways it was, but in other ways things had changed. You know, things move on.
Even though you were going home each summer and maybe, I guess, reconnecting with people, do you think it was different once you were home for good, that the catch-ups were different, or the friendships had changed? What was it?
Yeah, actually, you mentioning friendships changed. I'm lucky enough to have maintained good friendships with many of my school friends, and still do. But we're perhaps not as close as we used to be, but some we pick up with and some you don't see so often. But you know, the great thing about old friends is you see them and it's like you saw them yesterday. But yeah, people's lives had moved on, and you're not special when you're home just for a few weeks. Everyone makes an effort, and then the realization hits you that actually you're not special anymore. You're just blending into the background. You're not going back. And that's a weird feeling, but it does suddenly hit you. But once you get over it, it's fine. And like I say, I was lucky because we have roots here, and it's even the kids had friends that they'd had before they moved away. But yeah, you're all of a sudden you're not special anymore. You're not the centre of attention.
And Nikki, do you think is there anything that you'd do differently? If you had your time again for coming home, like anything you'd prepare for or have ready, or even if it was your mindset?
I'd say don't be too hard on yourself, because it's all the thing, you know, we've all prepared, we've all put our stickies on boxes, we've all, you know, we've done that many times and we almost do it on autopilot. I'd maybe try and just arrange a few things, you know, beforehand, try and see, you know, what's going on around, try and speak to people beforehand about whether it's gyms or, you know, whatever your interests are. Just try and build something before you go back, particularly if you're going to a new area. And our wide network of, you know, expat friends and social media, it's so easy to do that now. It wasn't that easy when we first went away. You know, there was no Facebook, there was I think Skype was just coming along, but other than that, it wasn't quite so easy to do that.
So you think maybe register for groups that you might be interested in and have those things all set up, whether you're going to play golf,
yeah,
or canasta, or
with some people beforehand, because there's always going to be, you know, like we've discussed, there's always going to be somebody that knows somebody, and we all know what it's like, so it's we can help each other out, really.
And Nikki, do you find that one of the common things that people have talked about when they're repatriating is that people just aren't interested in your story? Have you found that you've had to sort of bite your tongue a little bit?
Yeah, because there are, and I think you get to know the people that are interested and not. It sounds awful because I would want to know, but mostly they don't want to know. You know, they have their lives. It always sounds very glamorous, the expat life, but and in many ways it is, but I've always said, you know, you're doing the same old stuff. You're just doing it somewhere else, especially if you've got kids and animals. But Yeah, you know the people that want to know. You know, we have friends, some of whom travel a lot. They love to see the places we've been and lived, and many of them have visited us. But I also know the ones who just aren't interested, and you can tell straight away. If they ask, we'll show them. If they ask, we'll tell them. But otherwise, I would just don't do it.
And have you found that you've flocked towards other expats in your new location?
Well, my new location, you know, home in the southwest, is not the sort of place you'd find any expats. Actually, we get a lot of people that aren't from here. Obviously, a lot of people have got second homes and so on. But no, I've basically just slotted back in and with family and friends and made some new friends, admittedly, because we live in a fairly small village and some people are still here, but they're new people that weren't here when we left, and we've become very good friends with them. So in that way, things have changed. But no, I've just sort of slotted back in, really.
Is there an itch of that itchy feet, I'd love to get back on the road again, I'd love to be an expat again, or are you done?
I'm done. I mean, I do like to travel and I do get that itchy feet feeling sometimes, especially, you know, in a wet, muddy January. Because this time of year, you know, is great in Texas. You know, it's like an English summer. But no, I'm done. I mean, and it's not just, and the reasons for that are external, like elderly parents. You know, I have commitments now. You know, I've got, you know, we live on a small holding. I've got animals. It would be very difficult, and I just wouldn't want to. It was great. And if, you know, if a 6-month opportunity came up somewhere sunny, I'd think about it. But we'd go with a suitcase, or 20 in your case.
So would you call yourself a happy repatch? Do you think it's been a happy story, your repatriation?
Oh, definitely, definitely, because it was the right time for us. You know, my husband still has to travel. He goes up to London every week. He goes overseas occasionally. But, you know, it's all about, I think, being expat eventually makes you sort of realise, you know, what's important in life. And we just deal with, you know, what we're given and where we're sent, but when you finally do repatriate, you know, I look around and think, we wouldn't have done all of that, we wouldn't have, you know, I'm not that it's about things, it's about, you know, following your dreams, I suppose, to quote a cliche, but we worked hard for what we have now, and being expat was part of that. But yeah, I mean it's harder work. You know, I miss my Jakarta days where I played tennis and went to spas all day. I definitely don't have the nails that I used to have. But generally, you know, I'm where I belong, and that, yeah, that's great, and that's a great feeling.
Okay, Nikki, what did you think of Nikki?
Well, I like her name. okay, again, some themes that just seem to help and make sense. So she said she worked hard to maintain links with home and with friends. And I've heard that before. I had another friend that repatriated a couple of years ago, and she said her Facebook, she was very oversharer like myself. She said her Facebook page made people feel like they'd lived her life with her away, so there was no gaps and no catch-ups and there was no sort of awkwardness.
Yes.
And she also always reached out to them when she was in the country. Again, you know, you're not going to be special anymore, so take your tiara off and sit in the corner. No, but I think that, you know, that's something we've already talked about more than once today, is learn to recognize people who are and who aren't interested in your expat life, and don't mention it if you can tell they're not interested in it. You know,
yeah.
And I love that she said, you know, it makes her realize what's important in her life. So that's, and she feels that her expat experience has given her that, which I think is awesome.
Yeah, yeah. No, you're right. I don't know. You know, I'm definitely not special when I come home anymore because I've come home too much.
Yes. If you only came home once every 3 years, you'd be special.
I would be. And I'm not special at all. Now people aren't doing any special specials. They're like, oh, you're back again.
When you repatriate, they're like, weren't you living here anyway?
Okay, so tell me, have we had any reviews and messages on iTunes this past week?
Oh, thanks for asking, Kirsty. We have. In fact, we've had two new reviews on iTunes, which are very exciting. One is from Aideen in Abu, which I think is Abu Dhabi, is that?
Yes.
And she says, I feel like I know all three of you over the seasons from coffee dates and wine nights.
Oh,
thank you for your insights and allowing others to share their adventures and exploits. Bring on 2017 and being a fat expat. That's awesome.
Oh, thanks, Aideen. That is awesome. Thank you very, very much.
And then someone called 10 Years and Counting from the UK said, this is a great podcast. And they said, to know that there are others out there in this expat world that are going through the same as you is so reassuring. And advice and info given is so helpful and to the point. I've been listening since the beginning and each podcast is like catching up with a friend over cake and a cuppa.
That is so cool. Oh, thank you, 10 Years and Counting. And if anyone else is inspired to leave us a review or a rating on iTunes, that would be fabulous because it just gives us a little bump in those iTunes charts. Any voice messages this week?
Wow, yes, we did have some voice messages. Our most recent voice message is from Marnie in Singapore, whose voice we always love to hear. And she said hi and welcome back to 2017. So that was awesome as well.
Thank you, Marnie. Lovely, lovely Marnie. Okay, let's talk about podcasts. Do you want me to go first or do you want to tell me? All right. All right. I've had a lovely time on the podcast this week. It's like being on the Facebook. I'm on the podcast. So one of the podcasts that I listen to is the New Yorker Radio Hour, and you can subscribe. But a particular episode they had this week was one with David Letterman, and it was kind of split in half. The first half was David Letterman, and the second half was songwriter Jason Isbell. Letterman was just fabulous. I don't know if it's because I've had enough time to miss him. Do you know, I wasn't a Letterman watcher, but he obviously did float across my radar because you couldn't miss Letterman, right, back in those days. But it really made me realize how much late night TV has changed. Do you know, like when he talked about him and Jay Leno, and it was like, God, late night shows are nothing like they used to be. Like the guys that do late night now can sing and dance and they're youthful and, you know,
and
they
have
these,
everything, yeah.
Yeah, and they have all these tricks. And Letterman said that he has no idea how to post a clip on Facebook or YouTube or how to do anything. He has no digital prowess at all. And he still kind of talked about how much he loved Johnny Carson and, you know, because he talked about his history.
Old school.
He was so old school, like completely, completely old school. And then the second half of it with Jason Isbell, I had never heard of him before, but he's a musician. And it didn't matter that I hadn't heard of him before because it was this really fascinating interview with someone who is a recovering alcoholic. But he was one of those people, and I will never be like this, and I would love to be like this, is someone who just pulls out quotes of things other people have said in everyday conversation. Do you know, like someone's talking about, you know, working with an unsharpened knife, and they'll say, you know, well, it was like, you know, Shakespeare said blah, 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 and it's something completely relevant to working with an unsharpened knife. Do you know, I've just given a terrible example, but do you know what I mean? Like just one of those people that is so creative and clever with words that they remember all these phrases. But that was really good. But my highlight and my favourite
favourite thing, and I implore anyone to listen to this one, was I made my way back to Conversations with Richard Feidler, because we all know that I love Richard Feidler, and he's my favourite. But I have been wooed by other podcasts lately, and haven't...
Oh, you're going back home.
Yes. So my favourite one this week was I returned to Conversations with Richard Feidler, which if you're in Australia is on the ABC, but it's also a podcast that you can get all over the world. And Richard Feidler, of course, when he was younger, was in a group of performing artists called the Doug Anthony All-Stars. Now, Nikki, I'm gathering by our text messages and chats this week that Doug Anthony All-Stars weren't big in your world.
Well, I did say to you, I might know some things that they've done, but I can't necessarily say that I'm going to, you know, be able to recount long tracks of songs or passages to you.
So when I was young, and because I think Richard Feidler and I must be roughly around the same age, he's maybe a few years older than me. But
just going to Google that.
Yeah, when I was younger, he was in the Doug Anthony All-Stars, and they were three guys. There was him, Tim Ferguson, Paul McDermott, and they were the Doug Anthony All-Stars, and they used to wear these black suits, play the guitar, or Richard played the guitar, and they were just funny and naughty and very clever at sort of bouncing back off the crowd. They'd be at a lot of the fringe festivals, and they did Edinburgh, and they had a regular gig on the ABC every Friday night. But, of course, everybody grew up, and Richard Feidler ended up, you know, he did many, many things, television and a few other things, but he then went on to Conversations. Now, I'm making this far more long-winded. Tim Ferguson, who was one of the Doug Anthony All-Stars, came onto the show, I think it was in December, but I've just listened to it in this last week. And it was just fantastic. Now, I got very excited a year or so ago when, to me, it was my two favourite interviewers got together, and that was Ira Glass from This American Life got together with Richard Feidler.
Yes, that was awesome.
It was awesome. Well, I think this episode is just as awesome. And the reason why is Tim Ferguson is so eloquent and so, so funny, but he brought this whole new dynamic because he obviously knows Feidler really well, and you could almost hear something in Feidler's voice of, oh, God, please don't say that, or don't bring up that story, or I don't want to go down that path. Do you know, there was just a little bit, there was a bit of an edge there, but the other thing with Tim Ferguson is he has multiple sclerosis and has recently sort of moved into a wheelchair. But he talked a lot about this whole disability inspiration porn, and he's made so many fantastic points. I don't know, Nikki, if you follow Carly Finlay Morrow on
Facebook.
Yes.
I do.
And so Carly has ichitosis, which makes her skin very red, and it tends to peel, and she has to put a lot of cream on. And so she has something that's highly visible. But Carly speaks so well. In fact, she is called an appearance activist, and she speaks so well about disability porn, inspiration porn, and why we have to stop doing this to people, you know, the whole going up to anyone in a wheelchair who's, you know, doing anything and saying, oh, you're such an inspiration. And really they're just going about their day-to-day life. And he explained it so well with such a beautiful use of language. But he was actually on the show talking about a movie that he's done called Spin Out, which is based around a BNS ball. Have you ever been to a BNS ball, Nikki?
Oh, Kirstie, why would you think that? About 55, I think.
So for those who are out of Australia, a BNS ball is a Bachelor and Spinsters ball, and they're definitely very rural, and it's when the boys put on a tux and the girls put on a frock, and it all starts off very well.
With riding boots.
Yeah.
Yes.
It all starts off very well until somebody's had 15 Bundy runs, I should say.
Bundy is rum, yeah.
Yes.
I don't know, Jessie, have you ever been to a V&S ball?
I have, which you can well imagine.
Yes. Perhaps in robe, just guessing.
No.
You know,
actually, no. Okay, so I really, really enjoyed it. I enjoyed it for lots of different reasons, but I thought it was just a great conversation, beautifully done, and covered so many different things to talk about, and I thought it was fantastic.
Richard Feidler was born in 1964, so he might be a little bit older than you.
Yes, he is. So he's more
the
like my
show,
sister.
The Doug Anthony All Stars was on the ABC and called The Big Gig.
That's right. And Wendy Harmer was on that. Was the host of The Big Gig. Right.
Right. So they're your podcast for the week.
They're mine. What are yours?
I am going to stay away from sex-related media this week. I listened back last week. I thought, that's a little bit much of that there. So this week I'm going to another really non-controversial topic, and I'm going to talk about political podcasts that I listen to. During the election, I listened to a podcast called Keeping It 1600, which was a podcast by Obama staffers and speechwriters, etc. And they have, they thought they were just going to do it till the election and then they were going to go about and live their life. They were wrong. So since the election, they've started a company called Crooked Media. Get it? Crooked Media. And they have started a podcast called Pod Save America. And I just love it. It's just so easy to listen to. And I have to say, I'm afraid, people, it does have a liberal bent. So please don't listen to it if you're bound to throw things when people say that kind of thing. The other thing that I'm really enjoying on podcasts is CNN, do a podcast of Christiane and Aman Pause. Daily show on CNN. So we don't have TV at the moment. So as in, we don't have any streaming, as in TV coming in. We just have Netflix and Hulu, etc. So that's kind of a way of getting the news every day for me, is listening to Christiane. And I do love her voice. It's very soothing.
Yeah, she's very good. And, you know, I think I caught that the other day. I watched something while I was cooking and streamed it, and yeah, it was her, and it was talking about the role of the media at the moment and getting the facts straight and whatever. Just fantastic. She's very, very good, isn't she?
Yeah, she's excellent. Just want to do a shout out. Chats 10 Looks 3 is back, so phew. I was hanging for them to finish there. And I was so disappointed they did not speak about the post-election world state at all. But they did talk a lot about books and TV and things that they had done over summer. So they were talking about The Crown as well as Homecoming. So we're totally
already talked about both of those things.
I know. and another podcast I listened to this week, which is not political, is Story Club. It's Australian, and it's done by the Giant Dwarf Theatre. So it's that kind of pub-style storytelling where people get up and tell a story, and between 10 and 15 minutes. And there's just some crackers. Like, you just have to get to listen. You can choose. There's many, many to choose from, and it's really good times. What about TV? Anything?
Well, any TV? It's interesting because we're a bit like you guys with our TV in Qatar. We don't sit and watch as a family sort of any of, quick 7:30, we better sit down and watch blah, blah, blah. Do you know, that doesn't happen in our world. It tends to be Netflix or iTunes and, getting everyone together. And so we just don't do it. But obviously this last week, I'm in Australia where I have a whole different TV routine. Like, I basically turn the TV on and scroll through and see. So there's been some shocking television. The big thing this week is I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here.
Yes. I've been reading about that the interwebs.
Yes, and Married at First Sight is the other one. Yes.
It's one of my husband's favourite shows in America.
Well, he would love the one in Australia at the moment. I think there was a bride that actually ran away, so I have to get him to look it up. So, yeah, no TV for me at all in that way. I did go to a movie tonight, though. I went and saw The Lion.
Oh, how was it? I'm desperate to see it.
Oh, so for anyone who doesn't know, it's the story about the young Indian boy who gets lost. He basically lives in one part of India, falls asleep on a train. The train travels for 12 hours. He ends up in Calcutta and he gets completely lost, and he is then adopted by an Australian couple. And the story shows you how Google Earth, basically, once 25 years later, or 20 years later when he was 25, Google Earth was his salvation to finding his way home.
And it's a true story, right?
It is a true story, and I really want to read the book. I have had lots of people say, what an amazing movie, what an amazing movie, because, and I think the story is so incredible. But I'm going to be a bit controversial here and say there are a couple of things in the movie, and my daughter agreed because we ducked out together. I don't think the movie was planned really well in its storytelling, in that it got a bit slow in the middle, because we all knew, right, that the whole point of it was he was going to discover Google Earth and, you know, go looking for them. So there was a bit of a drag. There was a character that was his girlfriend that I thought was completely unnecessary in the movie. And there,
well, I think to put an American in the movie, isn't it?
Yeah. Is that
so
it?
Appeals to the American market.
Yeah, because she was American. And it was confusing because he grew up in Tasmania, but he went off to university in Melbourne, and there were seriously moments in the movie where the dad would come and knock on the door and you were like, oh, is he back in Tasmania, or is the dad flown over to Melbourne, or have they just missed the bit where the dad got on the plane and flew there? And like, it was really, and my daughter said the same thing. She said, Mum, I just thought it was a really little bit slow, but I defy you not to have ugly tears at the end.
Oh.
My Lizzie had to go to the bathroom. She was fine. She literally took one look at me and said, shall I just meet you out in the foyer? Because I was so sobbing, because there are scenes at the beginning where this little five-year-old boy is just walking through the streets of Calcutta and all these adults, no one stops to help, do you know, or ask if he's okay. He's just on the streets. And I know all of that part is true to life. And you just think, you know, they say at the end of the movie that there's something like 80,000 lost children in India at all times.
God.
And it is so heartbreaking to think of all those little people on the streets. You know, it really, really heartbreaking. Nicole Kidman plays the mother who adopted him and does a brilliant job.
I think she got nominated for a Best Supporting Actress, didn't she?
Oh, I don't know. She was very good.
No,
she was very, very good.
And the guy that plays the character, the Indian Australian,
Dev Patel,
does a cracking Australian accent.
When did he get so good looking? Like, he is so good looking, this movie.
Oh, you haven't watched The Newsroom, have you?
I have, but he's much better looking in this than he is in The Newsroom. Like, he's grown into, he's a man now. Do you know, like, in The Newsroom, yes, he still looks like a boy.
Yeah, no, he was still a boy. That's
true. He has a big man's body now. He looks tall and, okay, oh, my God, I sound like a dirty old woman, don't I? Okay, Nikki, you're going to do your sharing is caring thing again?
Sharing is caring. I'm happy to do it whenever you want me to. We would love you to share. If you enjoyed this episode, if you think it had some tips that were good for you, we'd love you to share either from the Facebook page or just write a note and suggest to your friends that they subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, TuneIn Radio, wherever you get your podcasts from. And please give us a rating on iTunes if you can and if you haven't, because we know that someone tried to do it twice and you can't do that. So log in at someone else's iTunes and give us a rating. What are we going to talk about next week, Kirsty?
Next week we are talking about when your worst nightmare happens and just the unimaginable. So next week we're going to talk to Jane Weeks, who lost her triplets in the Villaggio fire in Doha. And Jane's going to talk to us about that day and just, the unimaginable. So we'll have a couple of interviews. I think you might want to have tissues for this one, but also Jane is now working as a counsellor, so she's just
Wow.
So she will be brilliant at helping any of our listeners who, you know, maybe are going through the unimaginable right now. So, yeah, that's what we'll be doing next week.
Okay, great. Well, I think it's pretty late where you are, so we might have to shut up shop for today.
Absolutely. It is after midnight for me. I'm in my jammies.
Okay, well, I'll speak to you next week.
Okay, bye.